Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, you guys, do we have everybody? Pretty much, other than the lunch team? I think I saw the lunch team in there working a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, gotta keep the food coming. Okay. All right, you guys, I'm so glad that everybody was able to squeeze in here, fit in close, especially with the heart of our weekend being a deepening in sonship. Remember that there is something to proximity that Yahweh has always spoken to when it comes to being a son or a daughter or being one who is enduring the process of a maturing sonship, that not only do we cling and hold on to, but we also stay close.
Yeah.
So whenever you position yourself physically close, it is an expression of that positioning in proximity, mm-hmm. so that there can be a deepening of sonship. So mm-hmm. we're just trying to make sure that we're activating fully the word and all of the intentions that Yahweh had for this weekend, even when it seems very practical and very simple, that there's something more. So we're getting ready for our portion. I have a couple things to just send us into our time, and then I am going to also bring a recap of the word, especially with how full our time has already been. There are so many words that are being released, and they're all connected, and the Torah portions are no different, right? So we'll make sure to do that. But first, I just wanted to give one more prompt, because I know we were in multiple places and getting settled, that we do have trading cash, just like we do whenever there's a word that's released. So if you haven't had an opportunity and you do want to do that, Jason has trading cash right over there. Just be aware when you put it down, since we're in this space, that we're kind of keeping track of it so that, nothing gets lost amongst, bedding and things like that, that we're just aware, especially when we get up, be aware of trading cash around you, so that people who are investing in the word in that way, that's not lost or misplaced, okay? Yes, especially kiddos, you guys hear me, that there's going to be dollar bills around you, maybe on the floor, and that's trading cash. So when people start getting up at the end of the word or start moving around, just make sure that you're paying attention to any of the trading cash that's on the ground, okay? Okay, yeah. And letting the adults pick it up that are supposed to.
Okay.
All right, thanks, guys. Another thing, I'm going to go ahead and start sending, our offering around. I just really wanted to make sure that we're still carrying home. And a lot of times when there's just a shift, it'll be hard for us to remember the foundational aspects of what we do and how we function as a family. And so even though it's a Hanukkah week, even though we're not at the Kahal, even though it's a Saturday, we still get the opportunity to sew and give. So I'm going to start sending that around. Okay. Okay. I am not sure what to expect in the portion, especially because I feel like there's so many dots, there's so many moving pieces. We are receiving the word in the home that Yahweh said was a portal for the deepening of sonship. So while we are confronting systems so that we can at some point overturn them, like death and all of the morning readiness we've been doing, everything that Yahweh's been addressing in identity, and the two different kinds of death, and just all of the things that are already stirred and that we've been actively engaging, we have what's coming out of portions, and then we have sonship and what it means for sonship to deepen, which in my mind, if Yahweh says something needs to deepen, that means that what's been established at this point is a little bit surface level. That doesn't mean that it's bad. That doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's still a part of the process. But once something's established, there's an opportunity for it to be deeply rooted. Right? And so make sure that while we're preparing to receive the word, that you have a heart's position of hunger as a son, but a son who wants to go deeper in the things of the kingdom so that they can be fully established and never uprooted in you. There's a rooting that's taking place as we engage the portion. Okay? All right. So, going back to last week's teaching, can anyone tell me maybe like one takeaway that you had from last week? From last week's word? Ellen? Yes, death overcomes death. Ellen?
Yeah, just being able to turn to death or in.
Okay, two types of death. Right, Mom raised her hand, but you taught.
Yeah, she's not.
I'm working really hard on not beating the rock.
Okay. Okay, not beating the rock the second time. Mm-hmm. Does anyone remember what that word was that came with not beating the rock? Who's already been struck?
Yes, sure.
Who's already been beaten? Yes. So, so the perspective shift that we walked away from, because that was released at the very end of the teaching. So the perspective we walked away from was he has already been struck, so you don't need to keep beating him. Right? And why were we beating him? To demand that he produces.
Yeah.
So we get to receive from a completely different place this word right now, because we're not hearing it from the perspective of, I'm looking in this word to hear how you're going to provide or produce for me.
Yeah.
That's already been done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's already been established in you. So the work of the deepening of sonship is your responsibility.
Yeah. Yes.
That's ours to fully cultivate. And every time a word is released, there's a deepening, and there's a deepening, and there's a deepening. There should be. If there's not, one of the things to be aware of is that perspective that was released last week. If you leave without a deepening, maybe your positioning is that you're expecting or demanding of him that he be struck again to prove something to you, instead of sitting as a son who's responding to what's already been done and what's already been given, and now it's my turn to respond. So instead, when I hear the word, I'm listening. What does it look like for me to hear, receive, and respond outside of demanding proof? Okay? Okay. You're ready, Dad.
This Torah portion is very interesting in that we see a shift towards the end of the wilderness. So if you guys are keeping track of the timing, we're at year 40 in this Torah portion, which I would think would be exciting, right? We're at year 40. We can say we got to the end, just like when we were playing that game about getting to the promised land and we never got to it, and all of us were irritated and discouraged, and we would have been really excited to get to the end of the game and enter the promised land, right? Well, in this Torah portion, we're at year 40 in the wilderness. So we should be excited about that, but we should also be cautious because it comes with requirements getting to the 40th year. Okay? If you remember, Mom talked about this. After the first 2 years are documented, the other 38 are silent because they're not worth recording. Because there was a lack of movement and it's not even worth talking about. Which makes me think that as we go through our wilderness experience, we've gone through it. Let's say we're in year 40 right now, right? I would desire that 100% of my wilderness experience would be worth documenting.
Yeah. Yeah,
it could have been a two-year, it could have been a book about 2 years and them entering in, and all of it was documented because it was worth it.
Yeah.
Right? So we have to ask ourselves as we get to year 40, if we're walking through the wilderness real time, has our entire wilderness experience been worth recording?
Yeah, that's good.
How much of it hasn't even been worth it?
Yep.
As we live our life, how much of our life isn't even worth remembering or documenting or recording because we just didn't move.
Yeah.
Right? So coming to year 40, it's also kind of frightening because you're getting called to the carpet. If you remember, the book of the wilderness started with a census, right? And it's going to conclude with a census. And we have to remember that when he did a census, what he was doing was assessing what government are you operating under,
yeah.
Right? He started the process by identifying this is the government that you came out of that I rescued you from. And when he does the next census to conclude the 40-year wilderness, he's going to take another evaluation to see, are you fully operating under my government, or is there still some of that slave government in you?
Yeah.
Right? So we have to recognize that as we get to year 40, we may be excited, just like we all would have been if we concluded the game,
yeah.
Right? But that also means there's going to be some requirements, and there's going to be a very sobering evaluation of where are you at, and have you done the work of preparation to actually step in and possess what I promised to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So it's a very sobering thing, even though it should be excited. We should be excited about it. We have to realize that we're going to be evaluated on the work that we've done through this entire process. Okay, so we have to recognize the way that we operate and what we're being governed by is going to be evaluated before you enter into the promised land. Okay, so, I mean, when you think about this weekend and how the Holy Spirit has led us to what to speak on this weekend, anytime something's being dispensed or released or whatever the case may be, it's for a reason. And I want us to start thinking in terms of Moedim time. And when we have time for something, that time is going to come to a close.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an evaluation before you can cross over into the next divine time of appointment for whatever that's for.
Yeah.
Right? I would hope that as we stepped into the front door and crossed the threshold into the divine time of Hanukkah, we're taking each and every morning of meditation as I need to embrace this divine time so I can cross over into whatever's after this next hour.
Yep. Yep.
That's how we should be looking at things, because since we've been looking at this as we're walking through this wilderness in real time, as of this Torah portion, we're at the boundary and we're all being evaluated. Have you done the work right now?
Yeah.
Right? And that's sobering, because you have to honestly reflect, has all of my wilderness experience been worth documenting or not?
Yeah.
Right? And we're talking about, as of yesterday, we're talking about identifying the two types of death and which one are we operating under, and then come today, we're ready to step into the promised land, potentially, right? So the reality of walking through these processes is that there's a divine time for things to come to a close, right? We kind of talked about it at lunch tomorrow when we're talking about day-to-day life. We don't have tomorrow. There's no luxury that you're guaranteed. I'm just going to let you have an extension on this time. His divine time comes to a close.
Yeah.
Right? And we have to be able to be ready to be evaluated that we're operating out of his government so we can actually receive the promise that he talked about. Right? So the first thing we have in this Torah portion is the Israelites, after 38 years of silence, one generation has died off, and you have the next generation coming to the same place where in Numbers 13 and 14, Moshe designated spies, 12 spies, and sent them into the promised land. When that took place, they were in the same general geographical area as they are right now. Okay, so they're coming back to a place, a familiar place, but what's different is them.
Yeah.
Okay, and so when you think about when Moshe sent the spies and what they were being governed by, they were being governed by fear, anxiety, worry, right, Laurie? It's like you said, that's kind of a theme that we're experiencing. And what's interesting is that when you can come to a place of maturity and make the mistake of thinking that you're dealing with old stuff, because in reality, Yahweh's bringing you back to a same place where you were dealing with fear. Right? But you're different. We should be different, even though we're feeling the same environment in our past history of how we operated in the past. That's going to come to your memory because you're standing in the exact same place. This place that they're standing in, Edom, is interesting because if you guys remember, Edom is Esau. Esau was Jacob's brother who was given an inheritance. He was promised things, but they were outside of the promised land. Moshe appeals to Edom to ask them to gain passage through their territory to gain a quicker access to the promised land. And what's interesting about this is he appeals to their shared history of brotherhood, right? We've been through all these things together as brothers. And the thing that stands out to me is that you can share a bloodline with somebody, but that doesn't automatically mean there's going to be intimacy with those people. Yeah. Right? There's a broken covenant here, and there's two different forms of inheritance. One is close to the promised land, but it's not in it. Yeah. Edom is right up against the promised land, but it's not in the promised land. That's the inheritance that this shared bloodline has, whereas what Moshe and Aaron are trying to step into was the actual promised land. Right? So I know that that's an encouragement for some of us, because we talked about one of the other days we were talking about division and family and things like that. But just because you're family with somebody doesn't mean you're going to share inheritance and you're going to share covenant just because you're a literal brother or sister with somebody. Okay, so they appealed to that shared history to try to gain access, and of course we all know that they were denied. They were met with absolute confrontation, and there was no partnership in that whatsoever. So you can have bloodline family members, you can appeal to your history growing up together, and that does nothing for you when it comes to partnership and entering into the promised land. Okay, and so here you have the Israelites being detoured in the same way we've seen it before, but they're different, right? They're completely different. So they didn't rebel against it. They didn't force it. They didn't try to fight it, right? Every time we see the Israelites being disobedient, we see them trying to force things or trying to rebel against things. Whereas now, at the end of the 40 years, they're in a place where they're honoring what Yahweh gave to the brother that broke covenant. They're not trying to force anything. They're not trying to gain their way. They basically say, okay, we're going to have to go around. So you have them in a place where they're honoring territorial boundaries. They're aware of something that's outside of their previous condition. Their previous condition was all about, what about us? What's going to make this easier for me? What can I do when I want to do it? Whereas now they're subject to an obstacle in their way saying, you can't come in. And they say, okay, we'll go the long way.
Yeah, that's like that's makes sense.
Right? They're aware and discerning of geographical, territorial covenant boundaries, which is a significant sign of their maturity. Okay, they're aware of boundaries and possession. And so in this Torah portion, you're going to see the Israelites turning a corner and shifting in posture in order to cross over into the promised land. Okay, and I want us to relate to that because, number one, that's what is destined for us. That's what the wilderness experience is supposed to produce, right? So we have this transition, and I was thinking about it, our own expansion. We have this transition in the death of Aaron, which is something that has kind of been mind-boggling to me in general, that you can have these leaders that have issues, but for the most part, they're dedicated, they're committed, yet they won't step foot into the promise that they dedicated their lives for people to step into. And how could it be that they can't themselves step into it? It can seem like something that's unfair, but I think the character of Yahweh is being shown in this, because when you think about the style of leadership that they were given for this 40-year window of time, that style of leadership had to come to a close. And that's represented by Aaron. His style of leadership was for the purpose of preservation and survival. Aaron...
You're saying things so fast. There's so many things you're saying, you're just like, uh-huh, and then you just keep going.
It's because I'm on a train of thought. I got to keep going.
Okay. Keep going.
When you're in your wilderness experience, yeah. Yahweh will grant you the exact type of leadership that you need for that wilderness experience, which is the time that you're working out your immaturity. So you need leadership that's going to cater to and speak to and purpose itself in order to mature you out of immaturity.
Yep, that's okay.
Yep.
Just for a second. Okay. Go ahead.
The type of leader that we were given in the wilderness is basically there to keep us alive.
Yeah.
Despite ourselves.
Yep.
Because if it was left up to us, we would just die in the wilderness.
Yep.
Or we would go back and we would just go back to a life of slavery in the former government under the first census.
Yep.
So when you think about the transition that we see here, it not only is it just one leader dying, but it's one leader dying and his office or his garments being handed to the next generation.
Yeah.
Okay, so every time you go through a wilderness experience and it comes to a close, there's a new generation of leadership and a different style of leadership that has to come with stepping into a different place of maturity.
That's good.
Okay? But I want us to be aware that the type of style of leadership was solely to preserve us, solely to intercede when we screw up so bad that Yahweh just wants to take us out. Because that's what we're walking out in the wilderness, was just absolute survival despite ourselves. He had to give us a priest to literally babysit us, to keep us alive long enough to gain maturity enough to be positioned to take possession of the promise.
We never have to preach again. Dwayne, does this make any sense? Even with our question, the questions last night of like how he was, this is so good.
So we need to think of it as it's not necessarily an unfairness of, right? We have to step out of thinking what things are fair and what things are not fair, right? Because that kind of goes into the territory of us beginning to be the judge of what, you know, Yahweh's doing, and us judging and being critical of what he's doing and expecting him to perform or have to answer to why is this not fair. Okay, when you have, and Aaron would have understood this, when you have an assignment from Yahweh as a priest, Yeshua as our high priest understood his assignment to the point that he could become intimately familiar with death in the form of going through death, because he knew what his assignment was. And even when Peter wanted to defend him and start chopping ears off, he told him, get out of my way. You're acting or operating as Satan by doing what you're doing because you're blocking my assignment.
Yeah.
Right? So Aaron would have understood. If any of us would have talked with Aaron and just been like, this is just not right. This isn't just. This isn't fair. He would have just said, don't get in my way. Don't get in the way of me fulfilling my assignment ultimately in an elevated place of honor. Right? Don't try to stop me fulfilling my assignment of death right at the boundary line.
Yeah. In elevated honor.
Yahweh, think about it. Yahweh gave us the type of leadership we needed, and that leadership extended right up to the border of the promised land. Which is kind of a double-edged sword, because you can't, Aaron couldn't have died inside the promised land. He couldn't have stepped inside the promised land, because one thing we have to be careful of is, and this is where We need to realize what's happening real time with us. And when it comes to expansion and the things that we've been talking about practically, is that we have to be careful. And I believe we've seen this dynamic, and as I think about discussions that we've had as elders and talking about expansion and praying into it, we've seen these dynamics that we've had to navigate, not understanding that this is exactly what it is that we're wrestling with, is that if we're not careful, right, after 40 years, after a whole generation, essentially, we can become conditioned to wilderness style leadership and want to keep that style of leadership in a place of maturity where that leadership is no longer valid. Not saying it's not a dishonoring thing because Aaron fulfilled his assignment perfectly, in perfect timing, up until the border where they were positioned to cross over. He fulfilled his assignment perfectly. We have to be careful not to desire that style of leadership as we mature past that style of leadership. Right? And so when you think of expansion, and we've been saying it in terms of taking a new seat, everybody should be stepping into from one seat to another seat. That's exactly what we're talking about. Right? And there's a risk involved, because when you step into a new style of leadership, when a new style of leadership is being appointed over the family or the community or the house or whatever, we have to be aware that one form of leadership, one leadership structure that was built to preserve us has come to a complete close.
Yeah.
Right? Now, remember, everything I'm saying is built off of we ourselves have to be prepared to even step into that place where we're standing on the boundary. We have to even be in that place first for Yahweh to say, okay, now this style of leadership that was built to preserve you in your immaturity is done.
Yeah.
And it's an honorable thing. And Aaron would have believed that, right? He would have thought to himself, I have fulfilled my call, just like Yeshua, right? It's finished. Aaron would have felt like in his spirit, it's finished. My assignment is done. And so now I can die and the nation can go about its mourning, right? And so it's bringing one era to a close in order to have an honorable transition to fully embrace the next era of leadership. And I'm sure we can, you know, most of us have experienced leadership transitions in one way or another, and most of the time they're not pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? And I believe it's because there's a lot of dynamics going on. There's the responsibility on the leaders. There's the responsibility on the people. There's understanding, what is my assignment? When is it concluded? How far do I take it? Mm-hmm. Am I holding on to it too long? Am I being nostalgic about an old place I was in and the type of leadership that absolutely catered to me, right? Aaron was the one that no matter what they did or how far they screwed up, he would be the one to fix it. Somebody's going to fix it for me type of leadership.
Yeah.
And as a general dynamic or a general season, I can honestly say Kingdomers, we operated for a very long time in a type of leadership that was very much keep everyone alive long enough, keep everybody surviving long enough, resuscitate people so they can see another day long enough where they can actually gain some semblance of maturity to begin to operate on their own, to where you can begin to distance yourself as a leader. So we have to recognize that that was that type of leadership. And as a general understanding as a family, we have to understand there's certain things or ways that we operated under that season in the wilderness. We have to identify there's certain leadership traits that were built for that, that are no longer valid as we move into a place of more maturity. There's certain leadership dynamics that just aren't going to be there anymore. And it can seem harsh, right? When you're being, when things are being fixed for you and you're being interceded for and you're not expected to have a level of ownership and responsibility, it can be hard when you transition and all of a sudden there that expectation is there.
Yeah.
Right? So it can seem harsh. So the wilderness was preservation and survival until enough maturity could be built that they're operating under a different system of government. Okay? And going back to what I was saying about fear, a lot of what was driving the people was fear. And so at some point, it's just interesting to me that we're dealing with death in such an intimate way. We're looking at it. We're handling it.
Yeah.
We're trying to be as honest as we can about it. We're sharing about it. It's because we have to deal with fear.
Yeah.
We have to deal with fear.
Yeah.
We cannot be, and I'm not saying that there won't be elements of fear, like we're just going to be robots and we're never going to deal with it, but we can't be governed by fear.
Yeah, yeah. Governed by. Mm-hmm.
And so to me, there's always urgency, but to me, it's very real. Yesterday, we were talking about our struggles with fear. Today, we cannot be governed by fear if we're going to step into what we're supposed to step into.
Yeah.
And I feel like that just has to settle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However that settles, whatever we got to do to deal with ourselves, we're going to have to do it. And some of that may be a reflection on silent time in the wilderness of our individual lives that wasn't even worth talking about. It's just wasted time.
Yeah.
So you have the death of Aaron, which is a part of an honorable transition. And it's interesting that it says 30 days of mourning, right? It didn't just talk about a period of mourning or it didn't talk about a unspecified amount of time, but 30 days of mourning literally symbolizes the perfect transition time between one era and another. The perfect completion of a transition time. It was enough time for them to process their emotions, but only up to a point.
Yeah, that's good.
It was enough time for them to be in nostalgia or in mourning, but only up to a certain point, because if they would have carried that beyond that perfect amount of time, it would have began to take away from the new era of leadership and the new way that you're supposed to operate, because we're thinking about the past and we're actually being governed by the past because we're thinking about it too long.
Yeah.
I wish we had this teaching 10 years ago.
Thinking about it too long.
So
30, could you imagine having that kind of 30 days?
Yeah.
You've got 30 days.
Yeah.
But it also symbolizes readiness for public function.
Mm.
Because the 40 years in the wilderness, isn't that crazy? 40, it goes back to the readiness ratio. He gives you 40 years to prepare yourself, but then he gives you 30 days to function out of all that preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Complete transition one era to another. And you have to remember, on the one side, we're out of the wilderness, we're leaving preservation, rescue, and survival. That's what the leadership was for. Preserve, rescue, survival. Like, that's where we've been as a family. Literally us as a family walking through the Torah portions, that's where we've been.
Preserve, rescue, and
survival.
Thanks. Woo. It's going to be fun when we're out of that.
So because we're driven by fear, Yahweh had grace enough to give us a perfect type of leader to deal with our fear and keep us alive long enough to mature out of fear. Right, and then so they take him up on the mountain. This is part of the honorable transition. He's in an elevated place of honor. He's fulfilling his assignment. It's the perfect time to conclude that type of leadership that the people needed. And there's a transition where his garments are given to Eliezer, his son, the next generation. So it's what's cool about this is a lot of what happens in transitions of leadership is there's this tendency, because just by the nature of the transition, for people to feel like somehow there's just this automatic dishonor or taking away from previous leadership. Whereas Yahweh did this in such a way that the honor was maintained across the entire transition. It was a perfect amount of time. The first leadership or the former leadership concluded at the perfect time, and it was his garments that were given to the next leader.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't bury him in his garments and just his office is done and over with. It's the same office of leadership. It's just being held by people fulfilling different assignments with different types of leadership appointed for the purpose and where the people were at. So in comes Eliezer, and instead of being driven by fear, he represents a system of leadership because the people are driven by restraint. And this is interesting because if you think about it, if we're driven by fear, it's because of some type of incapability that we have. If just in our conversation, you know, this morning, we're talking about, Megan was talking about fear and the things that she's being shown to do, or maybe that was yesterday. Was that this morning? She's being given strategies on how to become capable of dealing with fear or governing fear. Right? If you're afraid of something, it's because there's something you're incapable of doing. Now, when the Israelites at the two-year mark were being assigned to send spies into the promised land, they were driven by fear because they felt incapable of dealing with what they were supposed to deal with. Right? They felt incapable. Now, in the 38 years of silence, you have this next generation show up in the same place, and they're operating out of restraint. The reason why they can operate out of restraint is only because they're capable. They're confident in their capabilities, and that confidence comes from alignment and honor of what Yahweh's instructions were. Right? It makes me think think about how that works. If you are extremely capable, that's the only way you can show restraint.
Yep.
Yeah.
Meekness. You can't show restraint if you're incapable. Yeah. You're not going to show restraint in anything because the capability is non-existent. Right? It's impossible for you to show restraint. It's like if you guys have heard the quote or the phrase that only somebody who's capable of violence can be really peaceful. It's a mistake to think you're a peaceful person if you're not capable of extreme violence. Only being capable of extreme violence allows you to show restraint and be truly peaceful. Does that make sense? In the same way, the nation of Israel came to a place where they were in alignment, they were properly positioned in maturity, which in this Torah portion meant they were capable of engaging in war, and they were actually authorized to go to war. Because they were capable, they showed restraint. So when they came to Edom, and they came to their brother, and they appealed to that shared history, and their brother, who confronted them in a military way, brought military arms to the border to meet them just in case they were going to be met with force, they just said, we honor your inheritance and your land, and we'll go around. That's restraint, because at this point they were capable of going to war, and they could have, right? But they decided, we're going to honor what Yahweh said, that this is their land. We're going to honor that, and we're going to show restraint. You can only do that if you're capable. Right? When you go back to the 12 spies, there's no restraint isn't even part of the equation. All they showed was their fear because they were incapable of dealing with what Yahweh was asking them to deal with.
Yeah.
So they're in this place of maturity, and like I said, they're being evaluated. When they go to this place, which is called it's not just Edom, it's also called Kadesh. It's also known as Kadesh, which means set apart or distinction. Remember the other day when I was saying when you're set apart, it's going to cause you to be tested, right? Being distinct, you're going to be confronted. You're going to be tested. You're going to be refined. So this is the place that Yahweh designated for them 2 years in and 40 years in, right? 2 years in, they were driven by fear. Now they're being driven by restraint, and they're coming back to the same place where their maturity is being evaluated. And that's what I meant by you can come to a place of maturity. You can come full cycle in a wilderness experience, come to a place of maturity, and you can feel like you can almost be like deceived into feeling like, why am I struggling with these things again? Because you're in a familiar place where your only experience was being driven by fear. Right? And so I feel like that would be an encouragement if anybody, I feel like I just had a conversation with Jalen, and he was saying how like these things are coming up again and I don't know why and I'm confused about it. And that if you're feeling that way about certain things, that could be a sign that you've come, you're being brought back to the same place to be tested in your maturity. Okay, don't get discouraged. Just know, okay, now that I'm feeling these old things again, that now's my time to actually overcome those things. Right? If there's so much in this Torah portion, but I feel like it's just going to be kind of concise and to the point. But when they came back to Kadesh, they encountered an obstacle, right? They didn't force their way. They didn't fight it. But because they're operating in maturity and out of a level of restraint, there's this dynamic where what they were dealing with was outside the promise. But it was touching the promise. It was close to the promise, right? We have to be able to distinguish, like there is the promise that has a boundary. Mm-hmm. Yahweh's promises in your life have boundaries. They have distinct borders. But there could be things touching that promise that you could mistake as part of the promise, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Right? And they, part of their maturity and restraint was that they encountered this obstacle, this test, immediately outside the promise, but it they didn't allow it to cause delay or defeat.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when they sent the 12 spies from the same area, their fear caused delay and defeat. Something outside the promise caused delay and defeat. Is that making sense? It's almost like what you have to be so locked on to the promise and be able to identify the borders, that nothing outside of that matters. Nothing out, even if it's close to it, even if you have to like you have to focus to discern where the border is, nothing outside of what Yahweh promised you, which is your assignment to fulfill, should cause delay or defeat. Nothing should have that type of authority in your life to delay you or defeat you from stepping into that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the level of maturity that we see our ancestors progressing in. Before, they didn't have that level of discernment and it caused delay and defeat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Now they're operating in a way that they're not only honoring their enemy, they're honoring their enemy's word, which is ultimately them honoring what Yahweh gave them, this land that he gave them, and they're showing restraint, but that did not delay them or defeat them from being positioned to cross over. And so as we think about all of these things, to me what stands out in my mind is there's a realness of timing and we've talked about it in every Torah portion. We are going, he's opening up a divine portal in these Torah portions for us to actively walk through the wilderness every week. Right? He's given us that 40 years in 40 weeks. Okay? And as he's given us that, he's also, there's a realness to this Torah portion being a conclusion of a divine time. And we have to take an honest look and evaluation of how did we do through this wilderness experience? Did we accomplish what it was designed to produce in our life, or did we just waste, you know, 38 years of time? And so there's a progression, there's a level of maturity, and to me, understanding that there's a type of leadership appointed for the wilderness that has to come to a close, and there's another type of leadership, which is Eliezer, which I didn't go into, but when that next form of leadership comes, you have to take that 30 days, that perfect time of transition, to deal with whatever you have to deal with emotionally. You have to recognize what you embraced about prior leadership that you're going to have to fight against being nostalgic about when the new form of leadership takes place. A good example of that, just in like practical expansion, like we've been talking about, is us taking a different seat or us crossing over from one style of leadership to another. There's certain things that we are just not allowed to do anymore or function in a certain way as leaders. We've said these things. We've said these things without understanding this clear blueprint of what a leadership transition looks like. We cannot be a vessel to keep people alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can't be a vessel to be immediately around to intercede when people screw up. We can't be the form of ownership on other people's behalf. Mm-hmm. Right? We can't jump in the trenches in people's mess like we used to, because that there was a time where we were supposed to operate that way.
Yeah.
Right? But as we all know, we've been talking about maturity because it's unto something. Yahweh needs us positioned in a certain place. We're a remnant. We have a purpose. All of these things we've been talking about requires a different form of leadership. The old form of survival type, catering, hand-holding, ever-present, watchful, making sure nobody's going to die, that type of leadership has to come to a close.
Yeah.
Right? In order for us to step over into something else, we have to embrace the new type of leadership, which is going from formation to actually functioning.
Yeah.
It's going from surviving to maintaining. Right? Surviving to thriving. Surviving to sustaining on like each individual on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's going from like a rescue mentality to responsibility.
Yes.
Individual responsibility.
Yeah.
And so this different form of leadership in the transition can seem harsh, right? Because it's like, hey, I screwed up. Where's my help at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I need prayer. Like, what? You're not interceding for me. Nobody's interceding for me, right? We have to understand with this different form of leadership that's designated for where we are now, we can't make the mistake of, well, this leader or that form of leadership was better. That was better for me.
Right.
I liked that better.
Yep.
That felt better to me.
Yep.
I'm not really liking this new form of leadership. Something about it's not right. This isn't how we used to do it.
Yeah.
This isn't how our family did it. Right? There's a Yahweh's laying out a clear distinction. This type of leadership is done.
Yeah.
It stays in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Don't make the mistake of being conditioned that you need this type of leadership, because that will keep you immature, right? Yahweh knew Aaron has to die at some point, because you can't have an Aaron-style leader your entire life.
Yeah.
Right? Eliezer was bringing them into an era of military function and precision and discipline and responsibility and shared ownership, which we see in the rest of the Torah portion. Right? You used to see the priest doing everything, reacting to everything the people were doing. Now you're going to see the priests running things, giving directives, sending them out, authorizing war, which means they have to be organized, disciplined, responsible.
Yeah.
Everybody is depending on each other, and it's a shared ownership between the priests and the people.
Yeah.
Right? When you talk about the singing at the well, you see shared ownership because you see priests digging and the people singing.
Yeah.
Right? There's individual responsibility. There's corporate ownership. And when they align themselves that way, according to the directives, they begin to see military victories because they're authorized by Yahweh to go to war. Right? Before, Yahweh's like, I'm not going to take them this way because they're going to encounter some things and they have no business getting confronted about anything.
How much
of us can relate to that? We will avoid something because we're incapable of dealing with confrontation. Yahweh knew these are a fearful people. They're incapable of being confronted, and I have to take them another route so they don't get confronted.
Yeah.
Right? There's a fragile state.
Yeah.
Yahweh is, and I feel like it's about freaking time that, and I'm saying this in the spirit, right? It's like, and I'm not saying that as an individual condemnation on anyone, but for so long, I have had the question or the observation of just the nonsense going on of how fragile, how as believers, as followers of the way, like how fragile. We're a bunch of freaking snowflakes. I'm just like, you know, people, I don't want to get into mockery, but it's like crying because God took something from me. And it's like, that's what toddlers do. That's what, when you chastise a toddler and you take something, that's what they do.
Yeah.
You took something from me. And it's like, go, once you're done with that, come back out.
But he's so good. He knew we couldn't do it. So he said, so I'm not going to allow for the confrontation.
Yeah.
And now he's positioning the Israelites. The Edomites didn't come to the Israelites. It was the Israelites coming to Edom. In that place of going back to, now they're like, okay, here we are again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so now we're no longer supposed to be the time frame that we've been allotted, 40 years, which it could have taken two. When they sent the spies, they could have entered in. Right? So he essentially gave us 20 times the amount of time to get to a place of maturity where we're not incapable of dealing with confrontation, because now they are fully capable of dealing with confrontation to where Yahweh can send them into confrontation by going to war, right? And they have the confidence and the capability that they know they're going to be victorious, right? So I think if I could summarize the Torah portion as far as a characteristic or a mark of readiness coming out of a wilderness season for the family, one of the marks of readiness is that you are genuinely capable of showing restraint. Right? I would say the opposite of fear is restraint. And if you're capable of showing restraint, that means that you have the ability to deal with something you used to be fearful of, and now you're on the complete opposite side of the spectrum to where you're having to back off, right? Restraint is backing off. I have to back off because I'm so capable. Yeah. Whereas before, it's like I can't engage in anything because I'm terrified. Right? It's like two people on the opposite side, on the opposite sides of fear. Right, and so a mark of readiness to cross over into possession is restraint and discernment of boundaries. You have to be able to discern, this is what Yahweh promised me. It's all within these boundaries. This thing that's right next to it, that is not what he promised me. It might look like it is because it's right next to it, but that's not mine. And that thing that's right next to it, I'm going to discern the boundaries, and that's not going to cause me delay or defeat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those are the marks of being ready to cross over. At the end of this Torah portion, when you see them entering into the plains of Moab in the first verse of chapter 22, that is the absolute them standing there is the absolute completion of this 40 years of the wilderness. Right? And he had to evaluate by bringing them to this place and having these this leadership transition. He was evaluating them in that. Right? He's evaluating the leaders. He's evaluating the people. Are they going to be able to navigate this leadership transition? And he's evaluating, are they going to be able to show restraint? Right? Are they going to be aware of boundaries? Are they going to respect those things and be aware of those things? And once they do pass that test, they enter into a place where they're literally standing at the Jordan River, ready to cross over. And he's evaluated the way they're governing so they can actually cross over and do what he intended for them to do when they sent the spies in. Right? And so now we're seeing our ancestors in a place of absolute readiness to cross over. And so I don't know, this Torah portion is interesting to me because I very much look at it as we've come to that place where we're at the edge of the wilderness and we're ready to step in. Nothing is stopping us from stepping in. But at the same time, I don't want to say that as like I don't want to say that as a green light for anybody to be like, okay, we're good then. I don't need to deal with or reconcile or address the years of silence that all of us have on our 40-year record, years of just not even worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Right? We have to deal with that. But at the same time, there is that divine closure of that window of time that we have to recognize. Okay, we don't have a choice to be governed by fear. I'm not saying that we all have to just automatically, magically not have issues with fear, but you can make a choice. I'm not going to be governed by fear because he's given us everything we need. He's given us the exact type of leadership we need to get to this place. We've had the exact type of leadership. We've had the grace. We've had the time. We've had 20 times the amount of time. Right? He let us do whatever we were doing for 38 years and just get to 40 years. Right? So at the same time, while I'm saying it's not a magic trick just because we've come to this place, there's also no excuse to just continue to be governed by the things that we've been governed by in our immaturity, right? Maturity, the time for maturity is right now, this morning.
Yeah.
We cannot be governed. You can make a choice not to be governed by certain things. Does that mean you're not gonna still have to work those things out? Of course not. Right? You're still going to have to work those things out. But we can make a conscious choice that is something we can decide. I'm not going to be governed by this anymore. Mm-hmm. Any of the conversations that we've had this weekend about, you know, what's been prompted, death, what are, you know, the certain types of death, fear, worry, anxiety, any of the examples that anybody shared corporately, you can see how easy it is when you really think about it for somebody to say, I'm aware of this now. So now I'm capable of making a choice that I'm not going to be governed by that anymore, but I still have to walk it out,
right?
I'm still going to walk it out. But I feel like the only way you will still be governed by those things is if you just ignore what you're being directed or equipped to do.
Yeah.
By ignoring it, you'll continue to be governed by those things,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. If mom says, I want you to take notes, I want you to answer these questions, take notes and answer the freaking questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Don't just go, I'll, you know, I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, continue to be governed by the same shit.
Yeah. That's
sorry.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, and I'm speaking to myself. There's things that I've had to, once I've been made aware, then it's the decision is on you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, this is completely on you whether you want to continue to be governed by these things or not, because you can, you're equipped and aware to decide at this point.
That's
good. So I think getting to the 40 years, like getting to the end of that game, we all would have been like, woohoo, we did it, you know, but it is exciting, but you also have to recognize the sobriety of, okay,
Now we're getting to step into a level of freedom, but with freedom comes absolute responsibility, and you have expectations, and you're going to be held to account for those expectations, right? That's what comes with freedom, and it's a hard transition going from bondage to freedom in that way, because you have to deal with these things. You have to be held accountable for these things, and I think that's what's that's the tough thing about freedom. Even though freedom sounds like a nice idea, Yahweh's freedom is you're absolutely being held to a greater standard, and you're being held to a certain set of expectations, and he's not going to tolerate anything less. So
that's good.
Like, that's where we're at as a family, and wherever you land, you know, near the border, close to the border, whatever we got, we just have to deal with that. We have to choose to deal with those things.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirs.org. Thank you.